The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show and welcome to The Big Lead. And before I get to all the local news, I will tell you that at 1:30 this afternoon, our friend Michael Bumpus, who does the Seahawks pre and post game with me, he'll drop by The Big Show after a tough one last night, primetime for the Seahawks.
Gurley steps back from a wing into the backfield with three receivers right. Goff takes the snap, looks, fires inside, touchdown. Cooper Kupp sliding down as he crosses the goal line. And again, somebody probably should have been underneath that, and they weren't.
Yeah, the Seahawks just had too many breakdowns last night. The offense did not score a touchdown. Russell Wilson has started 125 games. In only six of those 125 did the offense not score any touchdowns. Last night was number six. So it was just a stumble. But if the Seahawks win their final three games, they will be the number one seed, home field advantage in the playoffs, first round bye, all of those good things. But we'll talk with Michael Bumpus about all of that when he joins me later at 1:30 this afternoon. But whoa, we've got a lot of news to talk about. Let's get into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
So we just simply cannot have anything nice anymore around here. Did your parents ever say that sort of thing to you when you were kids? You know, they'd get you some toys and you and your buddies would accidentally break something. And your mom would say, that's why we can never have anything nice here. Well, that's how Washington State is. We just can't have anything nice or wholesome or beautiful or uplifting around here. And why? Because of an absolute, abject lack of leadership. So on Saturday afternoon, there's a beautiful event called Carols at the Capitol. And this is where choirs, school groups, people who have been rehearsing to walk into the rotunda at the state capitol, and as much craziness as occurs in our state capitol from the politicians, the structure itself, the building, is beautiful, and it's historic. And you do get a sense of majesty when you walk into our state capitol. And so this is a time in the Christmas season where adult choirs have been rehearsing, children's choirs. Some of these people, they cancel other opportunities because a good choir has lots of opportunities to sing this time of year. They cancel other opportunities to accept this one. And you can buy tickets. You can go into the Capitol. You can sing along with these choirs. You can just listen to the beautiful music. And it is really a nice event. Great way to kick off the Christmas season. But we can't have nice things anymore because a local Antifa group said that they heard that Patriot Prayer, which is known as a right-wing group, the Antifa group heard that Patriot Prayer was going to be in Olympia. And so the Antifa group sent out a notice, stand against Nazis in Olympia. Anarchists in Olympia call on all anti-racists and anti-fascists to stand together against white supremacy on Saturday, December 7th at noon in the state capitol. And then they talk about some group of right-wing guys who reportedly were going to be there. And so the anarchists and the Antifa people, they showed up. And so what happens to the beautiful event, the carols at the Capitol? Canceled. About a half hour before the event, the organizers of carols at the Capitol were told that they couldn't ensure their safety because there would be skirmishes between right-wing and Antifa groups in Olympia on the Capitol campus. Now, if we had a real governor instead of the guy who's going through the motions because he's so disappointed that he's not still in the presidential race, Jay Inslee, if we had a real governor, they would have protected the rights of all of these people who had come from far and wide, who were so excited just to sing Christmas carols at the state capitol. We would have been able to protect the beautiful event. We could have provided a lineup of cops enough so that people could safely get into the capitol. But once again, as we tend to do throughout this region, throughout our state, we have let the inmates run the asylum. And we let the radical groups take control. And they are choking the life out of everything that is good and pure and noble and beautiful. And for most of us who live somewhere in the middle of these radical extremes, when are we going to make this stop? When are we going to demand politicians? Jay Inslee, I heard he's getting hip replacement this week. But so he might be in a little bit of pain. I don't care. You're the governor. If you got to call in the National Guard so that kids and adult choirs can get to their event at the Capitol, then mobilize the National Guard. If you got to go in and crack down on extremist groups, and there was an injury, there was an arrest, one of the Antifa guys was arrested, somebody was assaulted and injured. But we've lost all sense of goodness around here. And yeah, we can blame Antifa, we can blame the right-wing group, but I blame Jay Inslee. I blame that we have politicians who do not have the guts, the foresight, to be able to stand up for what's good and right and decent because they are so busy, so passionate about pandering to the lunatic fringe in our state. This would be particularly upsetting to me if my girls were 25 years younger. Because this is the kind of event my wife and I would take our daughters to. We loved as a family going to things like singing Christmas carols and showing them the state capitol. All three of our girls were Senate pages. We wanted them to have not only a healthy sense of what goes on in there, but we wanted them to just see the process from the inside, warts and all. I don't hate government, but I hate the cowardice of politicians who turned over the state capitol campus to radical groups on Saturday, and the carols at the Capitol event had to be canceled. For shame. And Jay Inslee, why don't you get out of this governor's race? You don't want to run this state anymore. Don't make me get in, Governor. I don't want the job either. Crying out loud. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Bizarro World.
And then there's this. The chief librarian for the Seattle Public Libraries, he sent out a special message. Dear patrons, I wanted to share some information about a private event scheduled at the Central Library this February 1st that is already generating a lot of attention, questions, and concern. A nonprofit group called the Women's Liberation Front made a booking last month for space at the Central Library to hold a private event labeled as a women's rights talk and presentation. It appeared to be a very simple booking request. But then he said, library leadership became aware of this booking and its controversial nature just yesterday. Similar events held at two other public libraries this year have been met with significant community protest in relation to the group's views on transgender rights. We've been working to get up to speed on the implications. And then he says that they're going to talk to their transgender employees and they're going to talk to the Seattle legal staff and see if there's a way to cancel this Women's Liberation Front event at the Seattle Library. Here's what I found fascinating. So I start looking into WOLF, which is the Women's Liberation Front. Here is their statement of principles. That female humans, the class of people called women, are oppressed by men under a male supremacist system called patriarchy. That patriarchy is organized around the extraction of resources from the female bodies and minds in service of men, reproductive, sexual, emotional, and labor resources. That gender is a hierarchical caste system that organizes male supremacy. Gender cannot be reformed. It must be abolished. And so I'm thinking, okay, so this is a virulently anti-men group. But in the letter from the chief librarian, all it says is they're going to talk to their trans employees about the concerns about having this group. Well, the more I study the Women's Liberation Front, they apparently, yes, they hate men, but they equally hate men who say they are women, trans women. They don't believe in it. And I thought it was interesting. I want to talk to this group. I think we're going to get them on the show in the next day or two. But I found it interesting that the real bedrock foundation is they're anti-men. And that apparently is fine with the Seattle City Libraries, as it should be. I don't care if people don't like my gender. What do I care? But they're not talking to the men on the staff, and they're not thinking about canceling the event because this is a virulently anti-men group. No, because this group also feels the same way about biological men who say that they are women. I mean, they're just against men, period. That's what this group is all about. But I found it ironic, I found it kind of hilarious, that while most of this group's vitriol is towards men, the Seattle Library has no problem with that. But any man who claims to be a woman, oh, this group is really against that, too. And the Seattle Library can't tolerate that. It just shows, how ridiculous these government agencies like the Seattle Public Library are. You'd be okay with them just hating on men, but if they hate on biological men who say they're women, then you're trying to find legal ways to cancel their meeting space. How is one different from the other as far as a government entity being allowed to rent out space? It's just so ridiculous. So we'll follow this, but they're trying to keep the Women's Liberation Front out of the Seattle Library. And then finally in today's Sign.
The Big Lead. Your tax dollars at work.
The Seattle Aquarium is going forward with plans for a new big shark tank. And they want you and me to pay big money for it. It would be a $325,000 shark tank. They'd put 6 foot long white sharks, or 6 foot long sharks and 6 foot wide stingrays, native to the South Pacific, inside this new ocean pavilion tank. So how much is that going to cost you and me? $34 million. They say they'll raise the rest privately, but what they want from taxpayers is $34 million for a shark tank. Here's my question for you. Very serious question. We got all kinds of problems in this city. We are told we don't have enough jail space to lock up our criminals. We're told that we don't have enough mental health facilities to help the mentally ill. We don't have enough money to try to provide drug and alcohol counseling to the people on the streets. We don't have the job training for the people who want to clean up their life. But we got $34 million for a shark tank at the aquarium? Is that really our priorities in this city? I like the aquarium. Again, my wife and I took our kids to the aquarium when they were young. I could get mesmerized. I'll stand by that little jellyfish display. I don't know if they still have it. But they'd have, you know, like purple lights and spacey music. And you'd watch these incredibly mystical jellyfish creatures just floating around. I love that. I could stare and watch that for 20 to 30 minutes. But they did a $40 million expansion 10 years ago. Now they say they need another $113 million, $34 million of it from taxpayers. And when I talked about this a year ago, our news partners at Cairo 7, they talked to the CEO of the aquarium, why they need this big expansion.
Well, so as we look at the attendance year, about 45 days of the current year, we're at what we consider to be maximum capacity. And so if you came with your family to the aquarium on one of those days, it would be pretty tough.
Okay, so that's why they need the expansion. If you're so popular, how are you not self-sufficient? Like every other business in the private sector that has to get by without $34 million tax dollar infusions for their expansion. But when you are a quasi-government entity, it is so easy to just say that we just want the taxpayers to take care of this.
Documents filed with the city council show plans to raise about $60 million from private donors. $19 million would come from federal, state, and county sources. And the city of Seattle is expected to pay about $34
million. Okay. I'd love to know. Text me what you think. Aquariums are cool. Good family destination. But if they're that popular, they should be self-sufficient. Do you think... And because the city's on board, do you think $34 million for an aquarium shark tank is a wise expenditure of money when we've got people on the streets? We don't have enough cops on the streets. We need a couple hundred more Seattle police hires. We don't have the money for that. We don't have the money to house the homeless, but we got money for a shark tank. That's shameful. The boobs we got running this place. That is your big lead.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We will check the news for you. And then one of the more amazing stories of survival, you might even consider it a miracle. It happened on Whidbey Island. And you're going to hear the story coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. Well, as we are all in the midst of this holiday season, there was an unspeakably tragic story that unfolded on Whidbey Island this weekend. And to help explain exactly what happened, from the Washington State Patrol, Trooper Heather Axman joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Trooper, good to talk with you. I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Absolutely.
Okay, paint a picture of the road on which this Nissan car went hurtling off about 6 o'clock Friday evening.
It's a rural road. It's Whidbey Island. It's just west of Clinton. So you're talking a two-lane road, not well lit. I mean, it had rained earlier in the evening. I don't know if the roads were wet at the exact time of the crash. Very wooded area, a lot of underbrush. Off to the right of the road where Mr. Simmons left the roadway, extremely wooded and very steep embankment.
Okay. And Mr. Simmons is Corey Simmons. He's a 47-year-old man. He had his twin 4-year-old girls in the car with him. Do you have any idea yet how and why he left the road?
We don't. And as state troopers, we owe it to the family to overturn every single stone, and that is what we are busy doing to make sure that we have all of their questions answered in somewhat of a timely manner. But with a crash this magnitude, it's going to take some time.
And so after leaving the road, the car went flying down about a 100-foot ravine, I understand.
That's my understanding as well. However, the portion that is the most incredible to me is what was being described by troopers on scene as a 20-foot steep embankment. And if you have troopers on scene that are describing it as a steep embankment, I cannot imagine in the eyes of a 4-year-old how steep and treacherous that was.
Well, and that's where the story is just so tragic, and it just talks about, you know, 2 4-year-olds who wanted to live. So the father did not have a seatbelt on, is that right?
That's correct. And he sadly suffered a traumatic head injury at the time of the crash.
Okay, so he was dead at the scene.
Yes.
So tell me what these 2 4-year-old, I mean, I had 3 girls and 2 of mine are less than a year apart. And I'm just trying to imagine when they were 4 years old being put into a hellscape like that in just an instant. Tell me what these 2 4-year-olds had to do.
So yeah, after the crash, these 2 4-year-old girls checked on their dad, got themselves out of their booster seat, checked on their dad, and realized dad was in desperate need of help, as were they. They climbed out of a back broken window of their Nissan and climbed to the road. I spoke to the Good Samaritan, and she said as she was driving down the road and her headlights illuminated the areas in front of her, she didn't see anything out of the ordinary. However, when she passed, it's as if those girls made it to the edge of the roadway at the exact moment that she passed. Such a tragic crash, but to highlight the bravery, I also have 3 daughters,
yeah,
and the bravery that these little girls showed. Every little kid has the typical fear of dark and woods, and they overcame both of those fears to commandeer help for their father.
Yeah,
and that to me is so heroic.
It's heroic and it's horrific at the same time. And at 6 o'clock at night, we're talking about pitch blackout. They've just been through this incredible trauma. And so, but they literally at age 4 climbed up this steep embankment. The car was 100 feet below the roadway, and the last 20 feet was what your troopers on scene described as a very steep embankment, and they somehow pulled themselves up that.
They did. Not only steep, but also with extreme underbrush and wooded area. And even the Good Samaritan, you know, she had so many options in front of her. She could have just passed and called 911, or maybe she could have been looking the opposite direction and never saw these 2 little girls, but she didn't. She happened to see them at the exact right moment and pulled over, got them inside of her car, warmed them up because it was only about 40 degrees that evening, extremely chilly out. And called 911. The little girls just kept saying, "My daddy, my daddy." And at that moment, she knew something terrible had happened. She couldn't see the car from the roadway. So she called 911. Island County deputies got on scene. We have a mutual agreement with Island County for any severe crash like this that the Washington State Patrol will help step in and help investigate that severe crash. And that's what we did. And, you know, that Good Samaritan deserves praises as well. I mean, there's so many things that she could have done that her life was impacted this night as well.
Oh, absolutely. So as rural as this road is, as lightly traveled as it is, if the little girls hadn't climbed up to the road, is it a reasonable assumption that they all would have perished that night?
No, I don't know. But if the girls did not have their situational awareness with them that they did that night and that they showed that night, we could ultimately be looking for a missing family. And it's been so cold that, and obviously windows were broke out because they crawled out of the back of a broken window. I don't even want to fathom what the outcome could have been.
Yeah. It's just, this is a remarkable story. I mean, it sounds a bit like a miracle to me that this Good Samaritan was driving by just as these girls made their way up to the road. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Can you tell me anything else about their family? Is there a mom?
There is a mom. They were reunited with their mom. And, you know, there's not any good time that a serious injury or fatality collision happens. There's not a good time of the year that is. It's sad all around. But to now know that there's a single mom and these two little girls, and I don't know if they have any other siblings, but now they're without their father right before the holidays is so sad. I've been doing this for a little over 11 years, and there's just some crashes that stick with me, and this one is definitely one that will stick with me.
Yeah, well, it is. It's so sad for the dad and for the rest of the family, but there is a little bit of a miracle inside that story. And I really appreciate you coming on and telling my listeners, because I read it and it was still hard for me to believe, because I remember when my girls were 4 years old and I'm trying to imagine them in that situation. And what these two little girls did is nothing short of amazing.
Absolutely. So brave. And the love that they showed for their dad that night is so incredible. And I just want to, you know, just hopefully they just understand the bravery that they showed, because if they can just hold on to the bravery, that kind of bravery for the rest of their life, they will go places.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Trooper, I really appreciate you coming on with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Trooper Heather Axman with the Washington State Patrol with a story of tragedy and maybe a little bit of a Christmas miracle mixed in there. Keep those two little girls and their mom in your prayers, because that family needs it. I would love to hear your thoughts. 98973. You can text me. 98973, and the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Woo! A story came down during my show on Friday, and I just vamped with it because I did not know that the story was in the pipeline. But Seattle City Councilwoman Shama Sawant, oh man, if I wasn't married. Anyway, she is proposing a new law in Seattle that would forbid tenants from evicting their renters during the winter months. And so I started riffing on this on a variety of levels. First of all, whenever government says that they are going to take over, to that extent, private property without any compensation. So in other words, you got somebody, you're a landlord. You have somebody who is not paying their rent and you have to kick them out. The government would tell you that you cannot. And that is a blatant violation of the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution that says, and I quote, among other things, private property shall not be taken for public use without just compensation. So they're not saying, hey, we'll give you your rent, landlords. We'll make you whole. They're just saying that, no, you can't kick them out. So I asked the question. If you are a renter and your person next door has already said, oh, yeah, I'm not going to pay my rent in these winter months because they can't kick me out, what's your incentive for paying your rent other than being a good person? So we wrote this up. We put it up on My Northwest. It just went off like crazy. As of this morning, it had more than 250 comments because everybody recognizes just the sheer insanity of socialists like Shama Sawant.
Housing is a human right. And if housing is a human right, then how can you evict families and people in the middle of winter?
So you can't kick people out in the middle of winter, she says. And here's the details of her bill.
Make sure that the city's code is changed so that renters are not evicted anytime between November 1st and March 31st.
So somebody asked in the comments, can we all stop paying our, you know, if we're homeowners, how about if we stop paying our mortgages during the winter months? Are they going to make provisions that the landlords can collect back pay? Because think about this now. If somebody cannot afford their December rent and they don't pay in December, and let's say it's $1,500 a month, and they don't pay in December, January, February, March, the four winter months where you can't be kicked out, what are the chances that that person's going to come up with a lump sum of $7,500 for April, $6,000 in back rent, and their $1,500 for April? The chances are zero. And so what are the landlords supposed to do? Are they going to kick everybody out in April but have to eat the $6,000 that they lost because Shama Sawant said they're not allowed to collect it? So let's get back to you and me. If you're a homeowner, why doesn't Seattle pass a law that says we don't have to pay our mortgage for four winter months? I guess technically winter's 3 months. What else do we not have to pay? You know, if the government's going to say that you don't have to pay your bills, if the government is going to continue to try to increase this culture, not of dependency, but a culture of just flat out being deadbeats. And then you got these landlords who own a rental house or an apartment building who are, you know, providing the housing that's so desperately needed. Tell you what, I'd convert to a condo lickety-split if I had an apartment building and get out of the madness of the city of Seattle saying, we'll tell you who you can rent to. You know, that other insane law. Oh, yeah, the first person who shows up, you have to rent it to them. I tell you, and this is like the bare essence of local politics. They despise property owners, car owners, high achievers, people who make above the median income. They despise them. It is, and the reason is not for any purpose other than the class warfare. They have to make the poor feel like everybody else is the enemy. And of course, the only way you're going to escape being poor is if you have a healthy appreciation and respect for the people who provide you a job, provide you with housing, and aspire. If I work my butt off, if I work two or three jobs, if I'm thrifty and can put a little bit away, maybe I can be one of those guys someday who owns a business, who owns a rental property. But they don't want that. They don't want people with aspirations and hopes and dreams. And I'll tell you one other. Down in Portland, their city council, equally wacky, they now want private property owners to add mandatory rest spaces for the homeless. And this is, I'm not joking about this, this is being proposed in the equally crazed Tacoma City Council. But they are telling you, if you're going to build an apartment space or apartment building, you have to provide a space outdoor on your private property where homeless people can crash because they're sick of having them on public sidewalks and parks. We've fully gone insane. The Fastest 15 is next.